Welcome back to the Defying the Odds podcast. Today we are grateful to have Etienne Geoffroy-Gagnon on as a guest. We will explore Etienne's story of growing up in the Yukon to competing at the World Cup for freestyle skiing. Join us on this journey as we learn how he defied the odds.
So thanks so much for being on the pod.
Yeah.
And how did you even get started in skiing?
So basically, my mom was a ski patrol at the ski hill. So my brother and I, and my mom would basically just go to the ski hill every weekend. It's kind of a family thing. Get to the ski hill, and then my mom had kind of her duties to do, and then me and my brother would just go off and ski. So that's kind of just where it all started. And I always kind of tried to do all the sports in the school, just like soccer, badminton. I was always pretty involved in all the school sports and after school, kind of just trying to do as much as I could. And then just got to a certain point where I was competing in soccer and I was competing in skiing, and kind of just had to choose one, and ended up choosing skiing because it's a single man sport, whereas the team sports, we seem to have a tough time competing with the rest of Canada with the team sports. So yeah, I just went the route of the skiing, and yeah, also had a really good crew of friends that we skied with, just growing up, just kind of friends and classmates. We always were pretty good at pushing each other, and yeah, I really enjoyed the atmosphere of skiing compared to all the other sports. It was always more based around having fun, being out with your friends, being outside, rather than just pretty repetitive stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how it all started, and yeah, here we are.
You do aerial skiing.
So it's called freestyle.
Oh, sorry, freestyle.
Freestyle, but in freestyle there's four disciplines. So there's half pipe, which is kind of like the I don't know how to describe it exactly.
The half circle.
Yeah, it's like I guess a half circle. And then there's aerials, which is the really steep jumps. And then there's slopestyle and big air.
Okay.
I guess there's five because there's also mogul skiing, which is the bumps into the jumps.
Yeah.
And then my team is slopestyle and big air focused.
Oh, okay. So you're okay.
So slopestyle is rails into jumps.
Yeah.
So slopestyle is more based around, there's like usually 6 or 7 features, and you have to get a run together as difficult as you can. And big air is just one jump. So I specialize in slopestyle, and I like it a little bit better because every time you're at a contest, it's a new slopestyle course, and everyone has to kind of deal with the same task of figuring out a run and just having a couple days to do that. So the chances of the same person winning every slopestyle are not usually so high, just because there's a lot of other factors in there, whereas a big air event, it's kind of just one jump. And you know prior to going out what you're going to do there, and then you do that. And obviously the person that has the biggest trick that year is just going to repeat that same trick and do well with it. So there's more variance in slopestyle. It's kind of why I like it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's probably way more creative, like you just mentioned.
And there's a lot more that can go wrong. So it's definitely a little bit more stressful for sure. But in the end, it gives you a pretty good feeling of putting something together when you have to.
So I'm assuming you didn't start with like slope style and big air and stuff like that when you first got started. You probably were doing just regular downhill?
Yeah, so just regular downhill. I did some racing actually for a few years. Most of my coaches were kind of in and out of the park. They would do some racing and then they'd go in the park. And that's kind of how I got started with those guys. And then from there, I really enjoyed the freedom that freestyle skiing allowed me to have, where it's kind of, you get out there and whatever you choose to go after, you kind of do that. Whereas racing was more like the other sports I mentioned, that it's pretty one way to do it. And you can't really stray off and be that different. And yeah, that's kind of why I like the freestyle a bit more.
So when did you get into that? How old were you?
I think I was 12 when I started racing. And I think when I was 14... that's when I joined the freestyle team. And then Yeah, I think I joined the sports school when I was, I think it was 16 or 17. And then before that, it was just I was on the freestyle team, but we didn't do any competing or anything like that. So it took a few years to kind of figure out what the sport was all about and kind of grow the confidence to be able to go down south and compete in some of those other events.
So more like I'm thinking like as a parent, you're like you said, your mom was ski patrol and stuff like that. Were they petrified at all when you first like decided like, hey, I'm going to try a backflip or I'm going to try and do all these rails and all these spins and other stuff?
Well, it's like obviously at this level, everyone kind of looks at the stuff that we do and they're like, oh, there's no way that I would let my kid do that and all that. Yeah. But there's obviously a huge process behind it and there's a huge buildup. It's not like we're just going out there and doing things that we're not supposed to do. It's all pretty calculated risk. And it all started in the gymnastics gym, on the trampoline and kind of learning your tricks, getting your air awareness down, and kind of figuring out what you're capable of doing. And then the rest of the time on the skis was, for the first few years, it was just trying to get the confidence to do the jumps, do the rails, etc., and then slowly kind of put those two together. So yeah, there was a lot of background work before going out to a jump and doing a backflip. We have access to an airbag and water ramps, which is a jump onto a big cushion of air, basically,
yeah.
And also that into water. So we did do quite a few camps on those types of things before we tried to do any of the flips on the jumps. So yeah, it kind of all started there. And then once you kind of start growing your confidence, then your coaches kind of allow you to do a bit more and a bit more. And yeah, it's a kind of a constant ongoing thing. And even now, at the level I am now, there's still obviously some huge steps I have to take before I move forward. And obviously the higher level you get, the more risk is involved, but also the more fit I am, the more air awareness I've had, the more time I've had doing those tricks on those airbags. So in the end, it's definitely pretty calculated.
When you got started, you were talking about how your friends and you just loved it. You loved the atmosphere. It was just like hanging with buddies. Is there a point that came when you said, I really want to pursue this to the best I can do? And you really almost became competitive in it?
Yeah, so just basically my whole life in high school, I was always really competitive. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I tried to do as many of the sports as I could. Just because I really loved that competitive aspect of sports. And just competing within White Horse, always kind of, obviously there's not that many competitions, but just being able to get to the top spot in any of those sports like badminton or say soccer or something like that always fired me up quite a bit. In terms of competition, I really enjoyed the competitive aspect of everything, and I never got that feeling of doing that well. When we would say play soccer in nationals and stuff, we would always kind of just get wrecked, and that was not a feeling that I necessarily enjoyed. And then when I think the second or third year I was competing, we went to junior nationals in Quebec. I think I was 16, and ended up getting a couple golds down there. And that was kind of the first time that I did well on an event and kind of just landed what I was looking to land. And that was in Quebec, and that was junior nationals. From there, I kind of got the idea that it was something that I'd be able to pursue. Got a couple scouts that kind of scoped me out at that event that I started talking to get on to the next level and kind of move forward with that. And that was, I was in sports school at that time, so I'm pretty sure I still have all the journal entries from when I came back from that event, and I was really like, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to pursue. And then, as soon as I graduated high school, I moved to Calgary and joined the Alberta ski team. I did that for 3 years and then had a breakthrough season and got recruited to the national team. And now I've done 3 seasons with the national team so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
So go back to when you were 16. What is the process like? So let's say there's somebody that's younger that wants to do it. Do you have to kind of go to those nationals like you did? Or is there another way that they could pursue that dream or like the recruiting process that you talked about? Can you share some more light on that?
Yeah. So it all starts the base level is called the Timber Tours, which are all kind of like the younger provincial teams do those. And then after that, you go up to the Canadian Tour, which is also the provincial teams, but of their better athletes. And then once you do well on the Canadian Tour, then you can qualify yourself for the North American Tour, which is Canada and the United States. And then once you do well in the NORAM Tour, that's when you can get recruited to the national team. So it's definitely climbing the ladder. During my breakthrough year, I hadn't done that well any of the other seasons, but that year, my third year with the Alberta team, I won the Canadian Open Tour, and then I got third overall in the North American Tour, which qualified me for that team. But it's obviously, every season it's getting harder and harder to get into the highest level, which is World Cups, because it's all basically a point system, and certain events give you certain points. And obviously, so World Cups give you a lot of points compared to, say, a Canadian Tour or a NORAM Tour. So once you're at the World Cup level, it's really easy to maintain your points, right? Because you do one contest at a World Cup and you get a top 30, and that's like winning a Canadian Tour.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a pretty big jump. But the thing with the North American Tour is that the winner of that overall gets full World Cup spots for the next season. So but that's like obviously it's the United States and Canada, so it's a pretty big field. But yeah, the winner of that gets automatically included into the World Cups for the next season. And then, yeah, if you have a full season where you mess up every event, then you're not going to have World Cup spots for the next season. So it's pretty stressful, and it's, obviously there's always someone behind you that is trying to get more points and trying to get those spots over you. So that's always kind of been a difficult part of it all, but yeah, I kind of just always stuck to it, and now that I'm at the World Cup level, it's not so hard. But yeah, for people that are trying to kind of get into it and move forward, it all starts with you ski with the Yukon team, you go to those little Timber Tours, try and do well there, then you try to move up to the Canadian Tours, see how you do against the Canadian competitors, and if you're kind of in that top bubble, then you probably would get spots for the NORAMs, and then from there, keep going.
So the tour just under the World Cup, the Canadian US tour, you said like it sounded very, very difficult to make the World Cup tour, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. Did you feel like you had tons of pressure on yourself? Like, did you have any mental anguish or anything like that? Was it?
It was kind of always like I would finish a season, and I wasn't very happy with it, and I was not very happy on how I competed. And the only way I could manage the kind of pain that I felt from not skiing at my best was just to get back to work and to train really hard. And just every summer I kind of did that. I would finish the season and wouldn't be very happy with my performance, and then just basically grind as hard as I could until we were back on. And just did that and did that. And I never really thought about the spots or anything like that. I just really wanted to... Once I got in there, I just really wanted to win some of those events. And with those, like, the events are always at the same place, so you know the courses and you kind of know what you're up against, so it's pretty easy to prepare for it. Yeah, so basically just from just the sheer just competitiveness, I just really wanted to just do better and beat my personal best. And eventually, yeah, I had that breakthrough season and move forward. And obviously at every level that you get at every tour, like there's the Canadian Tour, you kind of have to figure out those events, what you have to do well at those. And then you move up to the North American Tour, and then the courses change a bit, the jumps get a bit bigger, rails are a little bigger, so takes you a bit to figure those out. And then you get to the World Cup level where it's obviously the top of the top, where at that point, it's like, now if I can figure out this level, then I'm going to be successful in this sport. That's kind of always how I looked at it, was just kind of keep my eye on whatever level I was at, and tried to never really look too far. And yeah, just focused on one level at a time and kept moving up. And yeah, now I still got a lot of work to do, but now I'm finally kind of in the area I want to be in. And now it's like, now if I can do well and yeah, like I said, figure out this level, then it's successful.
Yeah. What was the feeling when you finally made the World Cup? Like, you must have been overjoyed, like probably one of the happiest moments in your life.
Yeah, I was definitely really happy. I was also very nervous because I was finally competing with the big dogs and would finally be able to see where I was at compared to that. And it was really hard. Like, I was obviously really happy to finally move there, but it's also like that, okay, I just had a full season of winning events and being really stoked, and now I got to restart and be at the bottom of the barrel again, you know? So you keep going up, and then you're at the bottom, and you keep moving up. So I was really happy to be able to get that World Cup spot and to be able to move up to national team. That's kind of where the work actually, it gets a lot harder, for sure, in terms of the World Cup tour, just because there's obviously, that's where the big dogs are, that's where the money's at, the big sponsors and all that. So there's a lot of people that are able to kind of bypass those first few years of contests and kind of get right into it and start doing well right away. And I kind of knew that where I was at, that I'd have a lot of work to do, just because I kind of started, I guess, a little later compared to everyone else. Just coming from UConn and basically not being able to ski every day until I was actually graduated high school was kind of a big downer for me compared to all my teammates and stuff. So yeah, I had a lot of work to do, but yeah, I just kept moving forward and keep my eye on the goals and keep doing that.
So you said before you've been in the National League for 3 years. Have you been in the World Cup tour then for 3 years as well?
Yeah.
So do you have any like insane stories from like one time, maybe a major accomplishment that you had? Like, what's the biggest accomplishment you've had so far in your...
Yeah, so last season was the biggest season that I've had so far. And the first step in the World Cup tour or any tour that you do is figuring out what you have to do to make it to the finals. Once you're in finals, then you go for the podium and you go for the top. But the biggest competition is always in the qualification events, because there's more pressure on you, there's more people, there's more waiting time. And once you're in finals, you've already made that top 12. Whereas like in qualification, that's where you can mess up both runs and not get any points or land a good run and make it through. So last season, it was all kind of the same event as the first season. So I kind of knew what to expect, and I had a really good summer of training and came out firing, and I made it to 3 out of 4 of the finals, and landed pretty respectable runs at all of those. And that was last season was the first time I got a top 10 and the first time I got a top 5. So I got 2 top 10s and a top 5 at events, and that qualified me, I think, 6th overall at the end of the season. There's a couple competitions that were canceled one competition was canceled due to weather, and one competition was canceled because of what's going on right now with COVID. So yeah, that was definitely my biggest breakthrough, and I was super happy every time to make it through the finals and land a really good run. And it really made me feel like I was right there with the big guys at the podium and that I really had a chance. And then obviously everything kind of broke loose this season. And, it's definitely been the most challenging, year probably ever for me. So basically this year, a lot of the events that I really enjoy were canceled. So, last year I did well in France and I did well in Italy. I did well in Mammoth, California, and I did well in Calgary. And this year, because of COVID, none of those events were ran this year. Mm. And those were kind of my favorite courses and where I have the best chances of doing it. So they moved them around, and it was kind of like made me feel more like the first season where I'm coming out to these World Cup courses and I have no idea what they look like, no idea what I'm going to do and stuff. Whereas the other years I've had time to prepare. And a lot of the other guys on the team have a lot more experience than me. And they seem to obviously excel at those events. And usually we have about 6 or 7 events to kind of base our rankings off of. And this year, with everything going on, we're only able to do 3 events. So as soon as you mess up one event, you're kind of already done. Basically started the season, messed up the first event. Just kind of had bad luck in training and it just didn't go my way. And then the rest of the events, I skied really well at, but didn't make any of the finals. So yeah, this year was pretty hard just with how last year went. I had so much confidence coming into this season, and then obviously everything, with everything going on, it's hard to ask for too much, but
yeah,
it was really hard for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Do you need to take a break for a second? Are you good?
I'm all good.
Okay. So in previous times, you kind of talked about you want to kind of be a bit more cautious during qualifying, but then just go big or go home basically in the championship round. With only having 3 events, did you then change your strategy slightly? Like, did it mess with your psyche at all?
Yeah, in terms of like that, you show up and you see the course, and you kind of, there's always something in mind that you want to do and stuff. But with the first event of the year that we're at, usually we get 2 full days of training. And the first event we went to, we got 2 hours on the first day, and that was it. Just because of the amount of testing we had to do and the amount of kind of stress around that event, just because it was the first event of the year, and with all the regulations, they're really on it for that. So it really cut our training really short. And that was super stressful for me. Basically, wasn't really able to figure a run out during the 2 hours, and had to come out the next day and kind of put something together. So to start the season off like that, it was pretty stressful. And I did end up putting a run down in my feet like I wanted. And I think I ended up like 30th or something. And then obviously you go into the next event, and that's kind of what I've been remembering, right? And a lot of stuff was canceled. So from that event until the next event, it was probably a full 2 months. 2 months of waiting around and kind of just seeing what could happen and what wasn't going to happen. So that waiting part definitely stressed me out a lot, because that's kind of the only thing I was thinking about was the next event. Having to do well at that one. So that was really hard for sure. But in terms of like the stress factor coming in, once you're in the course, it's kind of just, I'm just doing my thing, right? It's kind of what I've always trained for. So it's not too difficult. I get in there and I kind of, once I start skiing around, then I kind of find my feet and everything goes kind of smoothly from there on out. But just the waiting around and the amount of testing that we've had to do and all that, definitely changed, the routine that we usually have. So usually from January until March or April, we're competition after competition, and you don't have much time to just sit around and think and kind of mope around how you did at the last event. It's just kind of like, you're just focused on the next one and the next one. And there's always another event where you can prove yourself at if you did bad at the last one. Whereas this year, there's a lot of thinking and a lot of dwelling on what you could have done and et cetera. So that part was difficult.
So this can be in the last few years. It probably won't be this past year. Maybe it was a couple of years ago. What is the proudest you've ever had, or your favorite moment in skiing? Like, maybe it was when you were 12, 13. Like, when is like your moment that stands out in your mind?
I think it was last year in Italy. So in the France event, right before the Italy event, I tried to do it's a maneuver. It's a triple flip.
Yeah.
And I'd been training that all summer and been kind of getting it. And then I tried to do it in my qualification runs in France. And I crashed pretty hard doing that. And wasn't too stoked on that. And then in Italy, made it through to finals, and I was like, okay, it's kind of time to redemption myself. And the first run, I was thinking so much about that jump that I actually crashed really hard on one of the rails at the beginning. It was a huge wall ride, probably like 15 to 20 feet, and I ended up falling off of it right to my back. and got pretty winded. And that was my first run. So I had to wait a full hour before doing my second run. And yeah, I kind of just dug really deep and was mentally there and was super focused and didn't really let it bother me, and ended up doing my full run with my triple in it. And that's where I kind of got my first top five. I ended up fifth there. And that was definitely the most proud moment that I've been, just because there's so much work put into the back of that, just that little, that result that I got. And with crashing the first run and being able to put the second run down was pretty big for me. So, yeah, I was definitely down at the bottom there, and I was pretty stoked. I was super happy.
Yeah, that sounds incredible.
It kind of made it all worth it, kind of all the bad moments and all the kind of waiting around and grinding had made that moment kind of make it all worth it.
But then after you do that 6 second run, you hit the triple, like you said. After the adrenaline wears off, was your back like just like killing you afterwards from the earlier fall?
No, I think I was just so stoked and just being able to land a run finally, and a really competitive run too, and feeling like I actually like earned my spot and deserved to be there was definitely the biggest feeling of basically relief, and just like knowing that moving forward that I'm right up there, and that if I keep pushing and keep grinding, that I could end up on that top three eventually.
So you kind of talked about how you guys practice and you make gradual progressions and you really get yourself set up to be successful with your moves and make sure everything's mm-hmm. safe. But as you talked about, like you fell off a rail, you're trying to pursue high risk maneuvers in some regards. Have you ever gone through a major injury or like numerous injuries like that during a run besides the one that you just mentioned?
When I was in grade 12, actually my last year of high school, we had an event. It was the event right before Canada Winter Games. And I ended up breaking my ankle pretty bad. I was in Big White. And I think that was the most disappointed I've ever been. Because I had to give up my Canada Games spot. And I was definitely really up there in terms of competitiveness. And I think I would have been able to do really well at that event. And just seeing the guys kind of represent the Yukon and having all that gear and going out there was a pretty big bummer for me. And then since then, I've been pretty cautious. And obviously, there's always some people in the sport that you see that are a little bit more reckless, but they end up landing more stuff and they end up being kind of bigger in some people's view. But for our sport, it's all about obviously maintaining. And as soon as you get injured, everyone's skiing for that much time and you do end up pretty far behind. So I've been pretty cautious the last few years of not doing anything too reckless. But obviously once you're in competition mode, then all those rules and all that stuff kind of goes out the window. It's kind of just you and the course. So you can mitigate as much risk as you can rolling up to those events. But once you're in those events, you kind of just have my headphones in and it's go time. So the biggest thing for us is that you don't usually get that hurt on the big tricks because you're so focused and you're so aware of the risk of doing those big things that you're fully in the present moment. Whereas like if you kind of have your boots undone at the end of the day and you have your backpack on and you go to hit a feature and you're not really paying attention, that's when you can get really hurt. So that's usually when most guys on the team end up getting hurt. It's just doing something kind of dumb that they weren't really thinking about. They weren't really zoned in. But yeah, in terms of the big events and the big competing, it's everyone's pretty in the present moment and pretty good about that.
Okay.
So no big injuries.
So what's like next for your goals?
So ever since I got on the national team, it's kind of a 4-year contract you have with the team, which is an Olympic cycle.
They actually have a contract for you?
Well, it's not signed. It's a verbal contract. It's like an agreement that if you're on the team and you're going to get the funding of the team, you have to at least try and make it to the Olympics. And then after that, you either can be done or you can say that you want to go to the next one, just so that it opens up spots and that no one's kind of just like soaking that in. Obviously, it's not, it's pretty loose and it's pretty kind of gray zone. But it is, that's the focus of the team. That's where our team gets all their funding from.
So you're telling me that people are on the national team, but they want to focus on more of the World Cup than actually trying to make it to the Olympics? Or is it?
No, so like, once you're on the team, like, your main focus is the Olympics. And you're training those 4 years for that Olympic. And that's what our whole program's built off of like, you want to peak when it's the Olympics, the year of the Olympics. For us, there's other events like X Games and Do Tour.
Okay.
And they're more like film events, and they're more film events. So you go there and you feel like a pro athlete, and you get all the, you get to go all the fun stuff and kind of deal with that. But that, if you go to those events, you miss out on the World Cup, some of the World Cups. Oh. And the X Games and the Do Tour events, you don't get points towards the World Cups. And every year, the amount of Canadians that we have in the top 20 is the amount of spots we'll have next year. Mm. So obviously the team wants everyone to go to only the World Cups, because that's where you get the points. That's where you kind of build yourself up for the Olympics. So having those other events interfere, they kind of have to tell you that if you're going to be on the team and stuff, you can go to those events, but the main focus is the Olympics in the end. So in terms of goals, it's definitely the Olympics. So when you first get on the national team, so there's an A, B, and C team. There's a development team. When you first get on, you're on the development team. You have to prove yourself, move up to B team, and then from there you can go into the A team. And basically the A and the B team are together with two coaches, and then the development team is separate. And there's a certain amount of quotas that you have to reach to move up. So for the B team, you need two top 10s to move up. And for the A team, you need a podium and a top 10. So I reached that quota last year, so I moved up to the B team. And basically, the only athletes that have a chance of going to the Olympics have to be on the A or B team. Mm-hmm. So I started on the development team. My main goal was the B team, moved up to the B team. And now my main goal is trying to qualify for the Olympics. As of now, there's 7 guys on the B team, or there's 4 guys on the A team, and there's 3 of us on the B team, and there's only 4 spots for the Olympics.
Okay.
So, and we don't know who gets those spots until basically the last event before the Olympics. So that whole process is pretty long and pretty hectic. So there's quotas to make the Olympic team, which is, so the season before the Olympics and the season of count towards your ranking for the Olympics. If you get a podium in any of those events, then you automatically get a spot onto the Olympic team, because they're looking for people that can have podiums. And then after that, it's all based on your ranking. So last year I was the second Canadian, after the ranking, and then this year, after these 3 events that we did, I'm now the 5th Canadian. So obviously my goal is to be in the top 4 when the Olympics come around. I think we'll probably have 2 or 3 more events, hopefully, before the Olympics. And it's kind of just coming down to crunch time.
Yeah, no, it sounds intense. And you said like the last event before the Olympics. What's the time frame of that? Like, are we talking like a month before the Olympics, or like 3 weeks or something like that? A
couple weeks.
So it'll be like 2 weeks before the Olympics, and like depending how you finish, you might go or not go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's gotta be intense, especially with less events, and like who knows if COVID are gonna cancel
anything. Exactly, yeah. So.
Wow.
I mean, I was so confident with the last season going in, and then with everything happening with COVID, I've kind of been slowly getting retracted. But like I said, it all comes down to one event. You do really good at one event, you're in.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm not gonna be pulling out now. I'm obviously gonna really go for it, but it is stressful because it's 4 years of work, or more than that, ever since I started competing, with the goal was always the Olympics in the end.
Yeah.
And all those years of work and kind of grind come down to these last couple events, 2-3 events that I'm going to do. So we got a long summer, and I got a lot of time to train and get ready for that. And then it comes down to two runs for each event. Yeah, so I'm gonna have 6 runs to try and qualify for the Olympics.
That's insane. 4 years comes down to 6 runs. Uh-huh. And how long does a run last? 2 minutes, 3 minutes?
Less than that. It's like 30 seconds, 45 seconds.
That's insane. So in theory, 4 years comes down to potentially 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. 6 30-second runs.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Make or break.
Now I'm really curious. Like, so Daria was on here a few weeks ago, and should be 4 weeks ago now when this airs. She is going to be training all summer down in Alberta. What is your training regimen over here this summer?
So there's an airbag set up in Quebec, a summer airbag set up, and we have camps out there. Our team usually, we do a 2-week camp, and then we get 2 weeks off, 2-week camp, 2 weeks on, and it goes like that. Right now, because of our quarantine rules in Yukon, if I leave, I got to stay down there. I won't be able to come back unless I want to do a quarantine every time,
yeah.
Which I really don't want to do. I've already done it, I think, 3 times this year.
Ooh.
And it's really tough to do the quarantine alone and be motivated. But I think I'm planning on, I'm going to stay here and work on my fitness for the next few months. And once I go down south to train on the airbag, I'll just stay down there the whole time. And instead of doing, say, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, I'll just probably just do a full month down there before we go on snow. And then right after the summer, what is it? In August, we always do a trip down to either New Zealand or Switzerland because they have snow down there. And then we usually do a 2 or 3 week camp. So I'm hoping that, depending on what happens with all the rules, I'll go down to Quebec, log in 3 weeks on the airbag, straight to snow, and then we'll be back here for early season training after that with the rest of the team.
Wow, that sounds awesome. What would you say to somebody that's maybe, I don't know, like a 7 or 8 year old kid or a 12 or 13 year old kind of when you started getting into this? What would you say to somebody like that?
Let me think.
No, it's all good.
What would I say? Just to focus on having fun in the sport and not be too caught up with your resolve, not be too caught up on being the best or anything like that, and really enjoy skiing. And if it comes down to them wanting to compete and go that route, then for sure have at it. But they got to remember to have a lot of fun in it because with all the politics in the sport and all the spot quotas and all that, it can get pretty stressful and pretty tough at times. And the reason that anyone gets into freestyle skiing is to have fun and to be out there with your friends. So if that's what you're looking for, you're just looking to have fun and be out there, then just keep going out there and skiing and don't worry too much about the competition side of things. And yeah, if you want to go that route, then just remember to have fun.
Now, if you're talking to a previous version of you, if you can go back in time, would you have changed anything coming up now that you know what you do?
I definitely would have changed a few things. I think it's hard to say now because everything's already happened, so it's all speculation, but
yeah.
Honestly, not really, actually, now that I think of it. I don't think I would be as motivated as I am now if it wasn't for those years I spent in the Yukon doing other sports. I could say that if I was down south earlier and I had more skiing time, then I maybe would be at a different place. But I honestly think that with my background of doing so many other sports and having the opportunity of being in the sports school and talking to so many other professional athletes through there, I graduated high school, and even though I was older than most of the kids I was skiing with, I was so motivated on kind of proving myself that I think if anything had changed, then I don't think I would be in the position I am now. Probably would have taken those first few years that I was in Calgary more seriously. It was kind of my first time leaving UConn. I was in Calgary, had friends down there, just finished high school. So there's definitely a lot of distractions around, and it was hard for me at that age to do that distraction control and be the motivated athlete that I am now. So I definitely would have liked to been a bit more serious in those years. But yeah, like I said, it's a learning process, and I've just grown so much through the years of doing all that. So hard question.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Do you think the UConn overall helped or hindered your performance? And what would you say to somebody that, like, lots of people will say, well, there's opportunities in the UConn, but sometimes, like, I don't get to, as you said multiple times, I get to compete with people down south.
Yeah, so obviously the grass is always greener on the other side, so you can always look at options, but there's some good things that come out of coming from the UConn, and there's some bad things, whereas it's the same thing anywhere else that you've been. For me, with my experience of being in the UConn, I have really learned to use what you have, and not to complain too much, and not to only do things when it's in the best case scenario type deal. I've always kind of been dealt with being the underdog, and just had to make whatever I had work. And that travels with me even now. I'm with the team, and you know, it doesn't really matter what course we have or what feature we have. I'll always be working the hardest out there out of everyone. And that is something I wouldn't have gotten out of coming from the UConn. In our sport, it's a pretty rich sport. You're in ski hills, you're in ski resorts, and you're kind of always in that lifestyle. And a lot of the people that I compete with come from some pretty wealthy backgrounds and kind of have no other stresses in their life, and they just ski and it's whatever. And for me, I've kind of had to dig deep to be able to make it work financially and with getting spots. And just coming from the UConn and having that amount of support and people that are just super stoked on what I'm doing has helped me a tremendous amount. And yeah, I don't think I would have made it to the national team level without the support that I've had from the community. And yeah, financially and emotionally too, and just having people support me and being happy with that keeps me kind of come back. And even if I have kind of a bummer of a season, I come back and talk to everyone, and everyone's still stoked. The kids are all kind of looking up to me, and they're all telling me that they're super happy with it, and that just kind of makes me really happy, and it makes me keep wanting to go back out there and work hard. And I feel like if I was in other scenarios where I was coming back home to, say, Calgary or something, there's so many other big athletes there and so many other sports that it wouldn't be the same at all.
Okay, that's a great answer. So Etienne, did I say it properly? Etienne?
Etienne, yeah.
Etienne, okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
I want to become the head of the French department at FH, even though I speak 7 words of French.
Nice.
So Etienne, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And that was wonderful. And wish you the best luck in the season. And hopefully we can, well, we being UConners, have 2 people representing us in the Olympics when you and Daria both go to the Olympics here in a couple of years. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.